I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object, you see a change, but that change is not really a change in the object, but just a change in how you relate to the object in your perspective of the object.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
Now please cross the chair. And you will sit down. Make yourself comfortable. And be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair. Making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back. Nothing is required of you except to observe the materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times. Alright? Hope you find the test a pleasant experience.
On this edition of Parallax Views, I welcome back to the show frequently requested return guest, private investigator, Ed Opperman of The Opperman Report and emailrevealer.com. Due to the positive feedback for that episode, coupled with the fact that Ed is just a great storyteller and broadcaster, as well as an all-around affable guy, I decided to invite Ed back on the show to discuss some recent controversies, or as I like to call them, Trump-traversies, around the President of the United States. Given the recent turn of events in the Manafort and Cohen cases, it would appear that Donald Trump may be
knee-deep in the shit.
Ain't that the truth? Anyways, regardless of wherever you may stand on the recent Trump traversies, Ed's always got a unique and interesting take on these matters, informed by his years as a private investigator and man of adventure. In any case, it's always a pleasure and quite the ride when you're talking to Ed Opperman. In this particular conversation, we cover the Manafort and Cohen cases, as well as delving into Donald Trump's lesser-known connections with the billionaire Jeffrey Epstein, who famously has been convicted of pedophilia, and who has many power player friends in high places, as it were. The conversation from there delves into a million and one different areas, as should be expected when you have Ed Opperman on. The conversation will always take you in all kinds of unexpected directions, including, as it were, Ed's take on Roger Stone and whether he'll be the next Trump buddy to go down. Hell, Ed even has a personal story about his dealing with some of Roger Stone's people. Oh, and we start out the conversation with a little discussion of Ed's recent contact with actor Tom Arnold, who is working on a Vice documentary series about Trump's various, shall we say, seedy shenanigans. All in all, it's a fascinating conversation with returning guest Ed Opperman. Now, to transition into the conversation, I've got a track for those of you who may be feeling like we're living in an alternate dimension ever since we entered the Trump era. It's a remix of the Twilight Zone theme by Bass Bomb. Check them out, folks.
We'll be right back. You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind.
You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance. Stand by the
force door into the Twilight Zone. This door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind.
You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance. Stand by the ideas you just passed over
into the 20th zone.
I'd like to welcome back to Parallax Views one of my most popularly requested guests, Ed Opperman of the Opperman Report.
Hey, Joe. Glad to be back. How are you?
Good, good. So, you have a lot going on recently. There's the Catholic Church scandal. I know you've been doing a few different podcast appearances about that, and then you also probably have been busy with all this Donald Trump stuff. I hear you. There was like some issues you had with Tom Arnold recently, the actor.
Yeah, Tom Arnold. Okay, I don't know. Tom Arnold's doing this thing for Viceland called the Trump Tapes, something like that. It's called. I told him I promised him I was gonna plug his thing. I probably should have learned what the name of it was, but he's doing this thing on Viceland where he's trying to find the Trump Tapes, and his focus on that seems to be to locating tapes where Trump is being racist and misogynist. So, you know, I saw this, and I noticed some things that he had a little bit of information. So I contacted Tom Arnold, and I told him quite a bit of the stuff I'm up to, you know, like a lot more than I talk about on the radio even. And, you know, they just took a chance. And first I contacted his agent, then Tom gets back to me, and in the title, in the subject line, he writes, "I'm a fan," in the subject line. So he had, he had seen the email that I wrote him, and I described some of the projects I've worked on in the past, some of the cases. He mentioned some stuff too, like he had seen the interview I did with Barbara Pilling. Barbara Pilling is the girl who, she was 16 years old. She's all pissed off at me now, by the way, Barbara Pilling. She was part of this documentary in the BBC called Panorama, Trump is the President, the Sex Pest. Which, you know, in the UK, that would mean like, is he a pervert or is he a creeper, you know? So, and Barbara Pilling said that when she was 16 years old, her agent would tell everyone that she was 17 years old. She was invited to a party. Trump was there. Trump started perving on her and hitting on her. And when she told him she was 17, he says, "Oh, well, that's a good age, a perfect age, not too old, not too young." Little creepy stuff there. But then she also mentioned some stuff to me off the air that I haven't spoken about at all. And one thing she talked about in the interview was that she met a girl who was 17 years old in a model's apartment in New York City, a Russian girl named Nadia, who had dated Trump when she was 17 years old. And there was even some talk about some cocaine use by Trump, by this 17-year-old girl. So I mentioned that to Tom Arnold as well. And then when he wrote back to me, he actually said, "Hey, guess what? Those people from that BBC, the producer of that BBC documentary is staying at my house. So isn't that a coincidence? Just as I was looking over your stuff, your archives, you know, here the woman you're talking about is staying at my house." So then I went back and I hit him with some more things I'd like to talk about. I kind of screwed things up because I mentioned that Keith Davidson is a client of mine. Keith Davidson was the lawyer for Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, and he was involved in a lot of stuff, you know, with the Charlie Sheen case and stuff and a lot of things. And so I mentioned, you know, trying to ingratiate myself with Tom Arnold. I mentioned that, and he says, "Oh, yeah, I know Keith Davidson. He served me with a C&D. He served me with a cease and desist letter to my attorney, Marty Singer." So it kind of put a little damper on things. But what happened after that is Tom Arnold on his Twitter mentioned that that guy Pecker, what's it, David Pecker, right?
David Pecker of National Enquirer.
There you go. David Pecker from the National Enquirer flipped on Trump. He knew this before everybody knew it. You know, Tom Arnold knew this. And in that, he put a hashtag in this. Get this. And this is right after we had talked. He said, what do you call it? What do you say? Charlie Kushner, Russian teens, a all-in-one hashtag. Charlie Kushner is Jared Kushner's father. Who went to prison because he was so hell-bent on donating money to the Democratic Party that he had set up little companies and straw men to do donations for him. And he got in trouble for that. He came under investigation. And what he did was he hired a hooker to sleep with his brother-in-law because his brother-in-law was cooperating with the Department of Justice. He hired a hooker to sleep with his brother-in-law and then tried to blackmail his own brother-in-law. This is the kind of guy this is Jared Kushner's father. Can you imagine that? Like, just imagine if your son-in-law, your daughter wants to marry some guy and his father was blackmailing people, you know, with hookers. But so now we're looking into this. Hey, could Charlie Kushner have been using Russian teens? And by the way, where did he get those Russian teens? You know, who has teen models coming out of his ears? You know, and teen Miss USA people coming out of his ears. Mr. Trump had that modeling agency, Trump Modeling Agency, where he was importing girls as little as 12 years old to work for his modeling agency. So who knows?
Wow.
Yeah, right.
You know, I keep thinking about how crazy it is. So Tom Arnold is going after Trump, and then his ex-wife, Roseanne Barr, who once said she was like an MKUltra victim, is now like all pro-Trump and believes in the storm and QAnon.
Yeah, how bizarre is that? Hey, and real quick, too, a little funny little when I posted the Twitter comment by Tom Arnold about Pecker, David Pecker, flipping on Trump, A.J. Weberman chimes in and he goes, "Hey Beavis," he said, "Pecker." How cool is that, you know? AJ Weberman chiming in with a Beavis and Butthead joke in the middle of the night.
But one of my favorite yippies, as always. So then we have all this stuff now, you know, going on in like one single day with Trump, where you have Cohen going down and Manafort. What's your take on that stuff?
Yeah, a lot of people say that's the worst day any president has had since Nixon. But I would go as far as to say it's as far as Kennedy. Back as Kennedy having a bad day. Listen, and it wasn't just that, too. They postponed the Flynn sentencing on that same day. Right after that, Pecker came and flipped. And then his CFO got immunity, you know. So yeah, Trump is in big trouble, you know, big trouble. And even if you listen to some of the shows I did recently, I kind of predicted Manafort would get a hung jury. And I guess I was partially right because that one juror did hold out on 10 counts, you know, and when it was like 11-1. And just think, man, Manafort has all – he's got the KGB working for him. He's got the mafia connections working for him. He's got the president of the United States in his back pocket, plus all his political connections. So if you ever want a defendant who could influence a jury or get to a judge, man, it would be Paul Manafort. And even then, he couldn't do it. So you got to look. You got to see, man, the writing's on the wall. You know, the writing's on the wall. Like, my God, can you imagine any other president, any other time where the campaign manager – convicted, the personal lawyer pleads guilty, and in his elocution, he's saying, under oath, yeah, I was directed at this by the President of the United States, you know what I mean? My God, man, like, you know, if any of these people, if Trump was my client, I'd be digging a tunnel with El Chapo into Mexico to get him out of town, you know?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Manafort started to come into the news more often over, you know, the summer of what, 2016. But I, you know, it's weird because I know there were people covering Manafort way before that. I think Daniel Hopsticker would talk about him, and even Ted Rubenstein, I think, had talked about him before that. And I knew the name, too, way in advance. I think he connected to the Jack Abramoff stuff, too. Does Manafort have a history that a lot of people haven't looked at before this?
Yeah, he had that law firm with Stone and another guy. That it was called the Torturers Law Firm, the lobbyists. Because they were lobbyists for all these dictators and torture people who were doing tortures for their own people. He's had a really bad reputation. You know, one of the sleaziest guys out there that you could have.
It's crazy, too, yeah. Because it was like all the people that I knew that knew about Manafort before Trump, they were all looked at as like the conspiracy theorist guys. And yet, you know, look, they were right.
The thing is, the stuff we know about Trump, you know, isn't even being broadcast in the mainstream. Who else is talking about the 17-year-old? You don't know him. So there's a lot of – and who talks about Trump and his connections to Adnan Khashoggi, you know? No one talks about it. Even when Khashoggi died, nobody talked about that. And no one talks about Trump and Epstein. No one, you know, there's so much out there. You know, why is Dershowitz humping for Trump on, 24 hours a day for free? You know, could it be that there's some blackmail dirt on him? You know.
You mean Alan Dershowitz, right?
Yeah, what did I say? What did I call him?
No, you said Dershowitz. I was making sure you were talking about the lawyer, yeah.
Alan Dershowitz, the Harvard law professor who was best friends with Epstein. According to Virginia Roberts, he was there in the room while she was giving oral favors to Epstein. He was just standing in the room chatting away with Epstein while this is going on. And, Epstein was donating tons of money to Harvard, building new wings down there and stuff like that. So, yeah. Still there.
Jeffrey Epstein is like this you know, billionaire that basically he did get arrested for, you know, child sex, right?
Yeah. He was it was a whole big case down there in Palm Beach, Florida, a walking distance from Mar-a-Lago. And one of his main victims was a little girl who worked at Mar-a-Lago, Virginia Roberts. She worked there in the folding towels at like 15 years old in the ladies' locker room down there. And she was picked up by Epstein and Trump's friend, Ghislaine Maxwell, who was Epstein's girlfriend, who was alleged to have child porn on her computer, on her phone and her computer and stuff, involved in sexual molestation with these. Anyway, Epstein was having three little girls a day come to his house to massage him. He would hire these young teenage girls to go around and hire other girls, recruit other girls to come to his place. And then it's fascinating, the pattern with these guys, because there's a thread. Look, with him and O'Reilly and dildos and you know, rubber vibrators and all kind of weird stuff. Anyway, so they launched an investigation on him down there in Palm Beach, and he was ultimately convicted. He got to 18 months, but he only served 13 months of that. He only had to do nights and weekends at the Palm Beach jail, where he had donated money to the sheriff's department down there, and then he was in a private wing. He was the only prisoner in this jail, the only one. And then he couldn't keep his hands off himself. We got a list of his commissary items. He's buying that Jergens hand lotion down there because he's, you know, he's keeping busy even while he's in jail down there. Anyway, so, you know, I became involved in that story. I was reporting on that before anybody was, man. When I tried to do a show about that, because I read an article in, I guess it was a magazine one day, it was sitting in a waiting room, and I says, what the hell's going on here? And I says, this is something I want to do a show about one day. And
you got the scoop on like Patterson, James Patterson wrote the Filthy Rich book or whatever?
Yeah, Patterson is it's funny, you know, he's running around now with he wrote a book with a co-author, a book with Bill Clinton, and nobody brings that up at all. Because Clinton was all connected up the wazoo with Epstein as well. More interesting than Patterson is who's that woman? Conchita Sarnoff. She wrote a book called Trafficking, right, about Epstein. And she was friends with Epstein. She was friends with Trump before all this came out, right? She was friends with Ghislaine Maxwell. I had her on my show. Her book was published by a Mossad agent. Named Ostrovsky.
Victor Ostrovsky?
Yeah, Victor Ostrovsky, who gave me a call here at my house when I was having her on the show. So, and by the way, too, if you look up his publishing company, how did you know about that? Did you hear about that through Pierce Redman?
I know about his book, and I think I heard you mention it on another show. He wrote a book by way of deception, I think, and he wrote another one too. Yeah.
Yeah, and even his the name of his publishing company or stuff like, you know, the cover story, you know, stuff like that, or the fake story, you know. Anyway, fascinating. Yeah, Epstein definitely has Mossad running interference for him. A lot of the stories you see of people who, you know, were newcomers to all this kind of stuff. We'll talk about the Lolita Express and Pedophile Island and stuff like that. And that's all manufactured to make you think that this all happened far away on some island, far, far away. And this all happened on a plane, you know, with a flight list and all that stuff like that. And it wasn't going on right under everybody's nose in Manhattan and walking distance to Mar-a-Lago. And at Mar-a-Lago, there are photos we know of with the Prince Andrew of York, who was one of the molesters of Virginia Roberts, who worked at Mar-a-Lago. And there's photos of Trump, York, and Epstein at Mar-a-Lago. We don't have the actual photos, but we have the from a docu-search, we have the what's that, the title, the heading, you know what I mean? He was down there for a tennis tournament. So we know, you know, this, and they want you to think, though, this is all down in some island, an island of pedophiles far, far away. What's going on right under people's noses? Everybody knew what was going on here.
So I didn't mean to interrupt earlier. How did you get on the Epstein case again, the Epstein case?
I read a... an article about it, and I wanted to do a show about it. No one was talking about Epstein, and I tried to find a guest to talk about Epstein. The only person I could find was Robert Morrow, that character, you know, who had spoken about it a little bit. He was disgusted by Epstein, but at the time he was working for Stone. You know, he was Stone's ghostwriter, you know, Robert Morrow.
Roger Stone, right?
Yeah, Roger Stone, yeah. And what do you call it? So I had him on the show to talk about it. And even if you go back and listen to that show, I did an hour with Morrow, and then I did an hour by myself just talking about stuff that he didn't know about. So, yeah, and then, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So I got to ask, what was Victor Ostrovsky calling you for about, like, what – what came of that conversation?
That's a good question. He just called to let me know he was Victor Ostrovsky and he worked for the Mossad, and wouldn't you like to know that? And, you know, because the show was all booked, you know, and I didn't know who he was until I started looking at him after he started telling me about his career in the Mossad, you know. But there's a lot of, and see, Conchita Sarnoff, she's the one who came out with a whole 3-page letter from Acosta, the federal prosecutor down there in Florida, and he wrote this 3-page letter about how he was, oh my goodness, they were investigating me and putting political pressure on me to cut this deal with Epstein, stuff like that. And so I thought he was a good guy, you know, and look at the pressure they put on this guy. Oh my goodness. I fell right for it, you know. So I don't blame people when they're repeating Pedophile Island and Lolita Express and all that nonsense. You know, it's laid out for you. You know, it's easy pickings. It's low hanging fruit, they call it. But I found out later on, Acosta, you know, he got a deal for him. Acosta was in on this, man. Acosta was running interference too, and he's got a sweetheart deal with Trump. Trump brought him into his cabinet there, the Labor Department, I think it is.
So this whole Lolita Express thing,
yeah.
For my listeners that don't know about it, if you could give a brief overview, because I always hear it from like the anti-Clinton conspiracy types that listen to like Alex Jones and stuff. They always talk about Lolita Express and Bill Clinton. They never mention like Trump or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. Lolita Express. Yeah. I don't even know where that started. I think that started from the butler, that butler who went to jail when he was trying to sell Epstein's little black book. Epstein had a black book with all these famous names in it, and he would have next to it massage or underline people because he's involved in these girls would come up and give massages. He called that was like a code name, massage. And there was like 29 phone numbers to reach Clinton in this little black book, and it was Trump, Ivanka Trump, Ivana Trump, Trump, you know, everybody in the Trump family's in there too, but no one talks about that. So, yeah, Clinton was on the Lolita Express, this plane. By the way, when Clinton was on there, he was on there with Kevin Spacey and Chris Tucker, who funny enough, was also involved in flying around Michael Jackson's victim on his private plane. Seems like all these guys have private planes. So there was this plane, and what they got the flight log to this. And we saw all these people, like Courtney Love was on there, and all these famous people. Netanyahu was on there, and the president of Colombia was on there. All these people were on there. So, even on one of Clinton's flights, there was a porn star on there too, as well, an adult porn star. But we know that Trump flew on that plane once as well. We know that because in a deposition of Epstein's brother, mentioned that Trump flew on Epstein's plane. And we know that Epstein flew on Trump's plane and brought a teenage girl with him. It was Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and a young teenage girl made up to look older. So, and we know that that's in a Golf Digest magazine article.
Wow. So I was a bit confused. Okay. So you're saying the is the Lolita Express and this like pedophile island stuff? That's all cover, or what?
It's low-hanging fruit is what I'm saying. There's a million layers to this Epstein stuff. You know what I mean? And whenever you hear someone talking about Pedophile Island or the Lolita Express, they're not even scratching the surface here. We know that there was the people on that flight log were probably – most of them were probably involved in some kind of these perversions, okay? You know, what's Bill Clinton – Chris Tucker and Kevin Spacey sitting around talking about on a plane. You know what I mean? What do they all have in common? You know, so you know that kind of stuff, and also too the names in the little black book. This is where we get the names, the people he's connected with, and some of his parties. You know, he hangs out with Woody Allen. You know, he hangs out with Stephanopoulos. You know, and by the way too, when you read the Epstein search warrant affidavit. Now, by the way, how come we don't talk about that? Everyone talks about the Pedophile Island and the Lolita Express. What about the search warrant affidavit? There's some pretty good, damn good stuff in there where they talk about video equipment in his house and child pornography on the walls of his mansion down there in Palm Beach. So anybody walked in and out of there, all these famous people you talk about, you know, they had to see nude pictures of little teenage girls. So there, the point I'm trying to make is that there's many, many, many layers to this. And they want you to think that this is something that's happening far away, you know, down in Virgin Islands and up on a plane someplace. And ooh, Clinton was on this plane. But they don't want you to know that this stuff happened in Manhattan. You know, this stuff happened. There's talk about parties that the guy would throw in Manhattan there where there was little Russian girls, you know, their little teen looked like hookers. Epstein was buddies with this guy named Jean-Luc Brunel, who was a modeling agent, scout, who was notorious for date rape. Jean-Luc Brunel visited Epstein in jail down in Florida more days than there were visiting days. So one of those days he visited twice. So this is a guy who was heavily connected with Epstein. He had some kind of connections too, allegedly, where he could get visas. There's a lot of stuff in this involved with this too, with visas, importing these young girls from these poor towns in the St. Petersburg, Russia, and around the world in Ukraine and stuff. These little blonde girls and bring them in here. And then even Trump modeling agency is along the same lines too, where he was sued by this little girl from, I think it was Haiti. They got her here on a visa, just like, you know, Trump's wife got here on the Einstein visa. Melania.
Yeah, there was actually a case that went to court, I think, involving Trump and an underage. Is that the one?
Well, wait a second. There's a couple of them. But the one with the model was that she said she was being treated as a slave. She was on her visa application. But Trump said she was going to make $80,000 a year. When she came here, she wound up making like $11,000 over 3 years, kept in the studio apartment in bunk beds, six girls to an apartment with these model apartments you hear about. And, you know, then they build all the FedEx and the limousine rides and your makeup and stuff like that, and they deduct that from your modeling work. There was another lawsuit where Trump was a co-defendant with Jeffrey Epstein.
That's the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Right. Okay, I know a lot about that, as you can imagine. Okay, it was July 2016, and what happened was Trump was sued by this girl named Katie Doe, who alleged that when she was 13 years old, she was recruited by a girl who was a party planner for Epstein, and hooked up with Trump, hooked up with Epstein, and she was raped at 13 years old. She picked up at a bus station and raped by these two. And she had several witnesses, okay? She had signed her own affidavit, and she had several witnesses who she had spoken to who knew about this at the time. In this lawsuit, too, she describes another girl that Trump would say to her, if you guys better behave, keep your mouth shut, otherwise you're going to wind up like Maria, right? So then what's his name? Wade Madsen believes he found Maria, a girl that's missing from, I think it was Trenton, New Jersey, or something like that. I'm not 100% convinced of his story. I think he's done some good work on it, but I'm not 100% convinced on that. Very interesting, though. The lawsuit was suddenly dropped. Okay, there was some problems with it. First, she did her own lawsuit by herself in California with this guy who was a, I think it was Jerry Springer type producer, and he got involved. He was involved with the Casey Anthony case and stuff like that as character, and they wrote the first lawsuit as a Jane Doe, Katie Doe lawsuit. But then it was refiled in New York City with Tom Mayer, who's a New Jersey attorney, is a patent attorney, who was just doing it out of the goodness of his heart. But later on, and this was shopped around to a lot of lawyers, you know, including, later on, Cheney Mason, who was a very prestigious attorney from the Jody Arias case, he came in, he was a co-counsel on this case. And what happened was, well, people say, well, that case was thrown out of court, they say. That's not at all what happened. I know exactly what happened. And what happened was, is that 6 days before the November election, Lisa Bloom came into the case, and she was going to do a press conference with Katie Doe. And what happened was, is the day of the press conference, Lisa Bloom's website was attacked by a DDoS attack, and her live stream, they were going to live stream the press, live stream was taken down that day by a DDoS attack. Okay, and this was the people involved described this as being a state level sponsored internet attack. No one talks about this, by the way. And that's what terrified Katie Doe and caused her to drop out of the lawsuit in fear for her life. Now, interesting, and by the way, too, in the Steele dossier, he mentions that Trump had connections with these Russian and Ukraine websites that could redirect porn traffic to a site and shut them down. So he had that ability, Trump, according to the Steele dossier, which I believe. Interesting is I just happened to be sitting in my car and happened to be listening to that clown, Sean Hannity, and right around the time of the election, it was right after the election, and Sean Hannity was talking to someone, I don't know, I remember who it was, it might have been someone like Lewandowski, you know, he says, boy, we dodged a bullet this week. And the guest says, what do you mean? Epstein. So Sean Hannity was familiar enough with this situation that in his opinion, that they dodged a bullet because that press conference was shut down due to a state level sponsored hacking.
Wow. I mean, Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about this Epstein stuff is that I've known people that aren't familiar with it, and like when you first present it to them, you know, and I haven't delved like too deeply into it myself, but you know, people have said to me, well, I can't believe that, and I'm like, well, he was actually convicted though.
Oh yeah, he pled guilty. Yeah, he should have been. He should have did 40 years. They found like 30 victims. And if you read the search warrant affidavit, it's heartbreaking, man. It's heartbreaking. It's available online. Anybody could find it. Because these Palm Beach investigators, because this was going on in a middle school, man, all these little girls were coming from these middle schools. And there's stories, too, about Epstein going to the house of these girls and his Ferrari and stuff like that, picking up, you know, being so obsessed with these little girls and then getting into their lives and stuff. He was giving them rental cars to drive around and stuff like that. He had a team of investigators and a team of lawyers, Ken Starr, Jerry Lefcourt.
Wait, Ken Starr from the –
Yeah.
He's connected – isn't Ken Starr connected to the whole Vince Foster thing?
Yeah, he was but Ken Starr was the investigator, you know, the Ken Starr investigation against Monica Lewinsky and all that stuff, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
That guy. But you know, my investigation into that, I believe Ken Starr was a front. He was a shill for the Clintons the whole time. And it's, I did a lot of work on that case too. For radio work. What was it? Oh yeah, yeah. Jerry Lefcourt, who was Abby Hoffman's attorney. Okay, he's now a very big attorney. So Epstein had a huge legal team. Roy Black, you know, he had these lawyers. They were running around getting these girls to be quiet, and they were giving them rental cars to drive around in, free cars and stuff like that. And if you read the search warrant affidavit, you hear about these cops going to these girls' houses at 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, knocking on the door, cold knock on the door, saying, and having to talk to these girls' parents. Saying, hey, you know, your little girl was involved in child prostitution and with this billionaire, was taken into his house and molesting them. And the girls, you know, you'd read these affidavits and they said, well, the girls would deny it. But then later on, the kids would break down and confess to their parents, and the people would contact the police again. And then, you know, the investigators would get to the girls and shut them up again. This is, you know, these are real people. These are real people, man, you know, kids. You know, this is disgusting stuff. I got a kid that age. And I remember when I was talking about this, my kid was around that age. You know, and I would say to her, hey, listen, if this happened at your school, would word get around? Would people know about this? Yeah, everybody would know. And Epstein, when they did the search warrant on his house, they found he had school transcripts on these kids. He knew which kids. He had their school records. He knew which kids were troubled kids who had problems at home, were ripe to be victimized. This was a huge operation, man, a sophisticated operation, with videotaping equipment in his house and all kind of bizarre stuff. If you go to my website, OppermanReport.com, and become a member in the member section, I have the videos of the search warrant executions at Epstein's house. I got all kinds of Epstein articles in there, too, and a lot of exclusive interviews and stuff, too, that I've done on this topic.
Yeah, it brings to mind the I think you said he only served what, 18 months?
13 months. Pled guilty.
He didn't. Hell, Victor Salva served more than him. You know, the Hollywood pedophile guy. Hey.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the guy's hung by the balls. You know, he has political. I have the 24-page letter written by Jerry Lefcourt exclusively. By the way, no one else has it. Go look for it. I dare you. The 24-page letter written by Jerry Lefcourt to the prosecutors, where he talks about Jeffrey Epstein is such a great guy because he helped create the Clinton Foundation.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I know. All this is – see, this is what I'm talking about, man. Lolita Express, blah, blah, blah. There's so much going on here that's deeper, that goes, you know, no one's talking. No one even knows about it. No one's paying attention to this. No one's talking about it. There's all kinds of lawsuits, too. Pierce Redman's doing great work on this, staying on top of this stuff.
Porkin's policy, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's doing – when it comes to Epstein, he does really good work. Hey, all his work is good, but I'm impressed with his work he's done on Epstein. Because there's all kinds of defamation lawsuits back and forth against Ghislaine Maxwell and his settlements all the time. There was a lawsuit of Dershowitz was being sued for defamation, and Dershowitz was suing Ghislaine Maxwell's attorneys. He tried to have them disbarred. All kinds of chaos back and forth with this whole bunch. There's all kinds of connections too. Roger Stone comes into this thing too. Because Epstein used to work with – Epstein has a very fascinating life. He started out at this Brooklyn high school. It was like a Welcome Back Cotter-type high school, okay? And somehow he winds up – I forget the – it might have been Goldman Sachs. And one of these big partners in these big brokerage firms, and he goes on his own. And his only clients, Leslie Wexler, this guy who owns Victoria's Secrets and Limited and stuff like that. Fascinating guy. Somehow – you know, he was for a while there. He was a teacher. I think it was the Dalton School in Manhattan with these little girls. When he was a teacher at this little girls' school. So, you know, and where did he come up with all his money? What's going on with this guy? How did he rise to these levels? Dershowitz says, you know how Dershowitz says, the way I met Jeffrey Epstein was at Evelyn Rothschild's house at a party. Hanging out with the freaking Rothschilds, this bunch. So, you know, there's so many levels to all this that people aren't even, you know, Lolita Express. Give me a break.
I feel like the next thing you're going to tell me is like Sly Stallone's involved.
Well, you know, Sly Stallone has his own stuff in his own background there, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. You don't know about that?
No, no. I miss this. What's up?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, he had a half-sister who he paid, oh, my God, a ton of money. He was paying her, I think it was $50,000 a month just for therapy. Plus, there was a huge settlement, like a $20 million settlement, stuff like that, because he was, you know, was accused of molesting his half sister. You'd have to go back. I don't want to do the story an injustice by not getting the facts correct. But then there was a case here too in Las Vegas where he was him and his bodyguard had sex with a 16-year-old girl, and she came, went to the cops and everything, man. But then she backed out. She didn't want to. She was too embarrassed. She didn't want to continue with that. And then there's a couple of other cases that he settled. One was a girl at a gym. And then more recently, I believe that the Los Angeles district attorney says that they're looking at charges against him, more recent charges.
Yeah, I'm looking at there's stories from USA Today and CNN from June 14th, 2018.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, it's coming out with him. And I know a guy who worked in his house. And there's cameras in his ceiling. He has cameras in the ceiling of his house. And I know some other stuff, too, that I can't talk about. But, yeah, I would say that he's up to his neck.
He's another buddy of Trump. And it, you know, right. Raises a lot of questions because, you know, you have these people running around with their QAnon stuff and the storm. Oh, he's getting ready to stop all the pedophiles. I think James Woods is even saying now that, you know, Trump's whole thing with you know, ICE is to stop the pedophiles. What's your take on all that?
Oh, that's insane. You know, by the way, Stone, too, has a connection to Epstein. He was part of a law firm with a guy. Epstein got involved with this multi-level marketing this pyramid scheme guy. By the way, who has a connection, too, to the Casey Anthony case. It's fascinating. The connections here. And Stone was a partner in with that guy there, too. So, and he has connections, too, as well. QAnon! Oh, my God. Give me a break. This is the stupidest thing in the world. It comes out. First of all, you know, if you go back to the beginning of QAnon, he was claiming that Hillary was going to be busted in a month. They were going to arrest Hillary in a month, you know? And then he's calling it like a military coup. And the idea is that in the beginning, too, he said that, well, I got to talk like in his fortune cookie code because if I don't, their bots will catch me and they'll shut me down in 5 minutes. Oh, well, here it is now, 2 years later. And then, you know, they got, you know, you Google what is QAnon. It's all over. Everybody knows about it now. And he's still talking in his bullcrap code. If he has something to say, would it now be the time to say it? Guy never said a damn thing. This whole theory that Trump is somehow anti-pedophile or going to round up pedophiles is insane. I can't think of a person who is friends with more rapists, pedophiles, and perverts than Donald Trump. Adnan Khashoggi, human trafficker, okay, and we know of teens. Roy Cohen, accused by, investigated by Jim Rothstein. They were involved with the Process Church. They suspected that he had little boys buried on his Connecticut ranch, okay, his Connecticut property. Like you said, Sylvester Stallone, he said he knew Harvey Weinstein, Epstein, buddies with him, Mike Tyson, he's friends with Mike Tyson, you know, like the list could just go on and on and on. He was friends with Michael Jackson. You know, it just could go on forever with Trump and his connections. Never met a rapist he didn't like, you know, or a child predator. Wait, give me one example where Trump has ever spoken out against pedophilia or any of this stuff. And see, some of these poor gullible souls, the reason why they come up with this is that this woman, Liz Cronkin, okay, wrote this article claiming that there were 1,400 or 1,500 pedophile rings busted within the first 2 months of Trump's presidency. Right. And this is more than all during Obama, the whole 8 years in 2 months. He's rounded up 1,400 pedophile rings. So I saw this and I said, you know, let me take a look at this. So I looked into these cases. There were no pedophile rings whatsoever. I did a whole show on it. The one of the operations looking into these child abuse cases and child molestation cases was 3 years, started 3 years before Trump even announced he wanted to be president. Others were those catch-a-predator type things where they go on the internet and they pretend they're a little kid. None of these things were rings that had anything. And they were all started before Trump even announced he wanted to be president. The story was complete bogus BS. She made it up. Because after I started doing my shows about that, I did several of them, people contacted her on Twitter. And she makes no attempt to provide any kind of proof or any kind of verification. All she says is, well, an operator must be controlled opposition. MAGA. That's her response. I actually talked to the cops who did the press. You can watch the press conference on TV for this operation. And it has nothing to do with Trump whatsoever. I called the the press office for the cops, information officer. Okay. I called them up so many times and I posted their phone numbers. Anybody can call them up. I put all their information out there. I called them up so many times trying to verify this story that they knew my voice when I would call them up. They would know it was me. Okay. She never made any attempt to kind of verify this or come up with any proof or anything like that. Just made it up. She made it up.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm a little pissed off about that. Yeah, I gotta admit. Yeah. Because why lie about this stuff? Hey, you know, man, Joe, why lie about this? Why lie? You know what I mean? First of all, if you're going to report on stuff that's you want it to be juicy, you want it to be interesting, there's plenty of real stuff out there to report on. You don't need to make stuff up. But why lie something so disgusting that this guy's out there and right around the corner, we're going to be rounding up these rings and shutting them down. Why lie about that when everyone just sits back and lets it go on because they think someone's working on it? Just like that, the grand jury report down there in Pennsylvania, you see all these news reports, 300 priests, 1,000 victims, rings rounded up and arrested, 300 arrests, 300 convictions. But two people were arrested in that case. Two people. It was all business as usual. They admit that there's way more offenders and way more victims. But you watch these, you know, the day after it happened. Oh, look what Mr. Trump is doing down in Pennsylvania. It's a Democratic governor. It's a Democratic attorney general down there. It has nothing to do with Trump whatsoever. This was going on. They've been investigating since 2009 in Pennsylvania. It has nothing to do with Trump whatsoever. Look what Trump is doing. They're these QAnon idiots.
Well, my take on QAnon, and I'm actually having someone on to talk about this, is I think it's one of these things that in the 90s and early 2000s were called an alternate reality game.
Right.
It's this it's basically a game that people make online, and they don't let the players know that it's a game. And I have someone on coming on to talk about that because he used to do these type of things, and he thinks that's what it is. I had Robbie Martin on from Media Roots recently, Abby Martin's brother. He thinks that it's a disinformation campaign possibly involving intelligence agencies, because he was telling me apparently Colonel Anthony Schaefer, famous for the 9/11 Able Danger thing, apparently he's like pushing a lot of this Pizzagate and QAnon stuff now. You know, I think it's the QAnon stuff that he's pushing. What do you think is behind the QAnon stuff? Do you think it's a disinfo thing?
Oh, absolutely. And I had Schaefer on my show, and he was promoting George Webb. You know,
George Webb is the what was it that he did? The bots or something? Prediction bots?
No, George Webb is that clown he's like, he got arrested for drunk. He came up with that thing. He said that there was a nuke entering into some harbor, you know, and they went and shut down the harbor and stuff like that. He did this thing where he was a crowdsource investigator. No background in investigations, and no credentials to be any kind of investigator. The guy was a salesman for IBM, and he attracted all these people. Everyone donating money to him, got all these followers. But from the very start, when he put out that first video, I'm talking about Epstein and stuff like that too, people started sending me his videos with this. It was almost like the same exact thing. A new account would pop up, friend me, and then I'd get an instant message from them saying, hey, Ed, we want to get behind this video and make it go viral. You know, like I'm on their team, like they know me, like we're working together or something, you know? And I saw that, and I noticed a pattern, right? I blocked a bunch of people. I just noticed this pattern, that there was something going on trying to promote this guy. And it's the same thing with QAnon, too, that there's like this – it is some kind of an operation for sure. You don't get that viral exposure and that kind of growth so fast. Unless it's manufactured, or you got the Russians behind you, something like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably too much to unpack in this episode, but there were a few other things I wanted to cover. I just got an email asking me what you think of because I had a few people I told I was doing the interview today.
Okay.
Someone just sent me a question. They were asking about what your thoughts are on Michael Avenatti talking about running for the Democratic presidential nomination.
Yeah, I got a tip about him. Some political people here in Nevada told me a story about him. I forget what it was. Stormy Daniels ran for office too. My problem with Avenatti, I don't care if he runs for president, he's not going to win president. You know, but my problem with Avenatti is that when he sued Keith Davidson, I've known Keith Davidson for years and years.
He sued Keith?
Yeah, he's both of these clowns. The new lawyer for Karen McDougal was trying to say that Keith betrayed his client. And then Avenatti actually sued Davidson, claiming that, again, he betrayed the client. And and then he comes back and Keith sued him for defamation. He's going to win that. There's no doubt. There's a lot of dirt on Avenatti. Avenatti can never be president. There's so much. He's got this bankruptcy, $20 million bankruptcy, some coffee company was involved with. There's all kinds of stuff on him. But let me tell you, Keith Davidson, I've worked on in a lot of cases, a lot of really touch-and-go kind of cases, man, you know, nasty stuff. And this guy is an advocate for his clients, man, and my go-to guy. I trust this guy. I like him. And, you know, and let me tell you, man, even I had a lot of cases this year that just blew up and got destroyed because he's so distracted with all this nonsense, this Trump stuff, that business as usual is kind of over. But, yeah, so Avenatti, I'm not impressed with him at all.
Okay. And this National Enquirer stuff with David Pecker, you know, because I guess they killed Karen McDougal's story.
Right.
Do you think more people are telling me now that they think more is going to come out of this? That the National Enquirer bought a bunch of other stories, and they probably killed those too. We don't even know if this is, you know, this could just be the tip of the iceberg.
Okay, if you go back to my after shows, I've been talking about since July of 2016 that porn stars, hookers, and other women that had pictures on Trump's plane and all stuff like that were out there, and that they were their stories were being paid off by the National Enquirer and Radar Online too. By the way, it's not just the National Enquirer doing this. There's a lot of people doing this. So I've been talking about this since July 2016. People can go back and listen to my shows. Because I knew about all this. I knew about all that. Yeah, I didn't know about Stormy Daniels by name, but I knew what was going on. Anyway.
So there's definitely legs to McDougal and Stormy's thing. Because I've had people try to argue there's not legs to it, and I think there is.
That they're not telling the truth. It's 100% that this is accurate. Their stories are real. And then Stormy Daniels is really taking down the president. He's going to go down with all this. But yeah, I was involved in another case with the National Enquirer too, with Shelley Tripp and Sarah Palin. You're familiar with that whole thing, right?
No. Do tell.
That's a good 40-minute story, man. But but that was covered up too by the National Enquirer. Shelley Tripp was a massage therapist in Anchorage, Alaska, and she had a Craigslist ad. One of her clients, which would give a happy ending at the end of the massage, you know, and one of her clients was Todd Palin. And she would service Todd Palin. Todd Palin would send people to her, and then she would document what was going on and report it back to Todd Palin, I guess for perhaps blackmail purposes. Todd Palin was blackmailing people. What happened was, real quick, is that one day her apartment was raided by, like, Department of Homeland Security and FBI with machine guns and grenades and all this kind of stuff. Like 30 cops showed up and raided this little apartment in Anchorage, Alaska over a Craigslist prostitution. You know? Anyway, and they said to her, hey, we know you're involved with the powerful people and stuff like that. We want you to talk to us. She didn't talk. She went through the process there. They arrested her on this minor charges. She got like probation and stuff. She went and sold her story to the National Enquirer for $50,000, and what happened then after that was the police chief of Anchorage, Alaska, did a press conference where he said, well, we examined her computer, we examined her hard drive, we examined everything, all her notes and stuff like that, her Rolodex, and we could find no proof that she had any kind of relationship with Todd Palin. Turns out later on, we find out that they never investigated anything. And as a matter of fact, they didn't even write that press release. Sarah Palin's attorney wrote that press release for the Anchorage police chief and put it on his stationery and put it out for him. Okay? How do you like that? The day we got, because they sent me all the stuff. I got the laptop and the cell phones and the hard drives, the thumb drives, and all the Rolodexes and all the calendars and stuff like that. I got videos and pictures of everything. The day that showed up in my office in Henderson, Nevada, Sarah Palin, 2012 it was, Sarah Palin goes on Sean Hannity and says, you know what, I'm not going to run for president. And the reason is because all these people out there in the woodwork claiming these crazy things like my husband's having an affair and things like that. I don't need any of this in my life. I'm not going to run for president. Same day I got this stuff. Later on, about 9 months after that, there's a story in the news about this Secret Service agent who went down to Colombia. He went with some prostitutes down there, and he didn't pay the prostitutes. It was a big scandal, right? I get a message from Shelley Tripp. Ed, I know that guy. That guy did the same exact thing with me, right? Now, at the time, nobody knew what was going on, who the guy was, what the details or what. No one knew this guy was worked on Sarah Palin's detail, but Shelley Tripp knew. We went back to the drawing board, okay, went back, dug up information on this guy, and then that I became involved in the congressional investigation into the Secret Service misbehavior, and they determined in that investigation, we were confirmed. Our story was confirmed. Everything that Shelley Tripp was saying was proven to be true. So that's another case I had where the National Enquirer shut down a story based on bogus stuff, you know, where they cover things up.
Well, I was going to say, too, I mean, I think the founder of National Enquirer was Gene Pope, and I think he was, like, connected to CIA, and I think he had mob ties, too.
Oh, absolutely. Well, not only that, too, but, you know, their office down there in Florida was where the anthrax was first discovered. The photographer, Robert Stevens, was down there, and they found anthrax in his office. That was the same company, National Enquirer, down there. That was connected up with the 9/11 hijackers, too, because the real estate agent was involved with them. And what happened was, too, there was a rumor. There's always been this rumor that there was this photograph of George Bush standing up on a bar urinating in college. And the theory was, the story was that picture was in a safe down there in Florida at that National Enquirer office. Well, get this. When the building had to be shut down because of anthrax, you know who bought that building?
Yeah, who?
Rudy Giuliani.
Ah!
Because Rudy Giuliani had a company who could clean up anthrax.
Damn.
And he bought it for nothing. It was like for $45,000, he bought a multi-million dollar building because he could clean it up.
Ay, 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 ay. Yeah. I mean, it's the connections are always dizzying, you know. Even with this, I was wondering what your take was on some of this Cohen stuff, because I thought it was telling that Trump, when he was talking about Cohen recently, he kept calling he didn't say that you know, Cohen was a liar. He kept calling Cohen a rat, and I was like, he's talking like an Atlantic City mob guy.
Yeah, Cohen's going to have some real good stuff to talk about, man. There's no doubt about that, you know. What are you going to do, you know? Like, and poor Trump, I feel bad for him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to get real heated. I'm looking forward to when the emails get dropped. Maybe we'll see your name mentioned.
I'm definitely mentioned. I'm definitely mentioned in the texts and emails. I know I am. But the thing is, I keep forgetting what I'm going to say. I'm getting old, Joe. I'm getting old, man. I'm starting to get my Alzheimer's is starting to pick up here. I'm sorry. I forgot. I lost it.
Ah, It's all good. We were. I'm just saying. I think everyone will be looking forward to seeing the emails. I know you're probably not at privilege to talk much about that, though.
Well, no, I don't know of any. But I know I've been involved in stuff that I know my name's involved. And I had threats. I had real serious threats, man, to my life right around that same time, July 2016. That I'm pretty convinced came from that area too as well. But now I was going to say. What was it? Oh yeah, Cohen. Oh yeah, Cohen having the tapes. Oh my goodness. Think of all the people who have tapes on Trump, right? All the people, we have a stadium full of people blackmailing Trump. We got Stormy Daniels getting paid off. Okay. By the way, when Stormy Daniels was, when they were negotiating that deal, with Keith Davidson and Gina Rodriguez, who was my ex-agent. She was also a client of mine, Gina Rodriguez. Was the agent for Stormy Daniels and McDougal.
Also involved in the escort world, I believe, right?
Yes, she was a porn star herself. And at one time, I noticed that one of her phone numbers traced back to an escort service. I don't know what she was doing, though. But the thing is, she was Octomom's agent. She was involved in Mama June from Not to Hot. This is the kind of stuff she was working on while they were getting a payoff from the presidential candidate. So this is the crew.
Isn't she on like a Mama June spinoff show now or something?
Well, yeah, she was there. She was Mama June's agent, and she played herself there in the TV series. Funny too. Her role in the series was that she had a falling out with the Mama June, and she fired Mama June, which happens with Gina and everybody. She fires everybody. She has a falling out with everybody. I can tell you stories about that. It'll go on forever. But the thing is, who else? Okay, how many people are blackmailing Donald Trump? McDougal, Stormy Daniels, right? We got
the whole Omarosa thing now.
Omarosa's got videos, she says. She's got to set up with videos, man. She's wired up, man, for sound. We got her blackmailing Trump. We got Michael Cohen is taping Trump. You're trying to tell me all these people got dirt on Trump, but Putin doesn't? If everybody else does, we can imagine what they got. They must have compromise, you know, that would make all this other stuff seem like a joke.
I mean that's the thing about Trump that I've noticed. It seems like he swims with a lot of sharks. You know, I found it funny when I found out recently that John Gotti's kid is like a huge Trump fan. I'm like, oh boy, Trump picks the best people to be friends with.
You know, it's funny because we're talking about people taping Trump. Okay, I remember back when I lived in New York City in the 80s. I used to date a lot of flight attendants, okay? And one time we were out, and, oh, you know, these flight attendants, just like these model apartments, they have these flight attendant apartments because they're not all staying there at the same time. So like 10 girls will get the apartments together. And we were out one night with a bunch of friends of mine, and the girls started saying, "You'll never believe who's at our apartment right now." And we said, "Who?" They go, "Marla Maples." Okay, this is when the story first broke about Marla Maples having an affair with Trump when he was married. And the press was all over her, chasing her down, hunting her down. And she went to hide out with these flight attendants. She showed up with all her clothes in garbage bags, okay, to hide out over there. And so as a joke, I said, "Well, you know what, man, we should tap the phones. I'll go down there and tap the phones. And we'll, you know, we can sell it to the National Enquirer. We'll make a fortune." Everybody got mad at me. But I was making a joke. But I repeated that joke later on in other company, and I believe it got back to Trump, because not long after that, I was at the U.S. Open, and Trump was about 20 feet away from me, and you know, it's a very steep seating there, you know, down. And I was looking at the tennis match, and he was down there with some other model who was, you know, all smiling at him when he was around. As soon as he left, she had a snot look on her face. But when he was down there, and he, every time I turned my head, Trump was staring daggers at me, dirty looks, looking at me. So I suspect that word had gotten back to him about that, about my joke of wanting to wiretap him. But, you know, just think, man, you know, everybody was taping this guy. You know,
so I gotta ask, because I told you we were gonna bring it up. Do you think Roger Stone's the next guy that's gonna go down, or maybe the next guy that'll turn on Trump?
That's interesting. You know, I had St. John Hunt. I talked to him on the show and off the air. As a matter of fact, when that new Stone book, I think it's the new Stone book that just came out that St. John wrote with him, I was the first show that St. John did to promote that book.
And for my listeners that may be unfamiliar, St. John Hunt is the son of super spy E. Howard Hunt.
Yeah, and he ran into E. Howard Hunt. St. John Hunt was struggling, and he went down to one of these JFK conferences put on by Chris Milligan, and met Roger Stone at the bar, and they hung out one night drinking. And Roger Stone told him, says, "You know, man, you're royalty, man." He says, "You know, you're a legacy." He says, "You shouldn't be struggling." He says, "I'm going to give you a job. You're going to come work for me." And so, and man, St. John Hunt, you meet him now, man, is a whole different guy. He's so eloquent, and the way he's speaking, still so much confidence, man. Listen, look what these guys are up to, but I can respect that, you know. I can respect the Stone, too. So, do I think Stone is going to turn St. John Hunt? I asked him that question. I says, yeah, and I, because he's trying to say Stone did nothing wrong. I know Stone did wrong stuff, okay? But I said, do you think he'll flip? And he said, no way. I don't think he'll flip either. You know, this guy will die in prison. A lot of old guys will die in prison, okay? Now, Stone, it came out recently. He came out in one of these indictments against the Russians, and they talk about how he was in contact with the guys with Guccifer and WikiLeaks and all that kind of stuff like that. I believe that. I also, they talk about how he met with a guy who was, again, Russian or Ukraine, one of those things. And the guy said he had the emails and he would sell it to Stone for $2 million. And Stone said he forgot all about that meeting. But after it came out, oh, yeah, now I remember. But it was so ridiculous, $2 million. I'm not going to pay this guy. But then Stone goes and he does an investigation into the guy. It was a gangster and a troublemaker. It was a seedy guy. But the guy managed to get a meeting with Roger Stone, right? But he did this report on him that was – he spent a lot of money on it, man. It would be like a $25,000 report. Oh, there was stuff – yeah, he had gotten some federal documents in there that I knew it wasn't easy to get. Right? So this was – he hired some real, really good investigators with a lot of inside sources. And the way he put his investigative report on his website – is very bizarre too. It's almost like cartoonish, like with fake paper clips on there and like pages torn out of notebooks with handwritten notes on it, like a cartoon type investigation. But the report was very, very well done and very, very expensive. Stone is up to his neck in all this, bottom line. Will he flip? I don't know. He'll definitely be indicted though.
Well, Stone is such like a weird character because like, the way he very publicly wants to present himself with this image of he wants to be like the seen in the media and by the public as like the real life version of Kevin Spacey's character in a House of Cards. And it's like, well, of course the heat's going to come on down on you when you're doing that, you know.
Well, you know, Stone is Stone was Al Sharpton's campaign manager when Sharpton was running for mayor in New York and running for president. That was Roger Stone was running that. And, what's his name? Al Sharpton was used to split the Democratic vote.
He did it with the Reform Party in 2000, I believe, with Trump trying to break down Buchanan.
Exactly. And also, too, Stone was responsible for those when they were doing the Hanging Chad countdown there in Florida. And he rounded up all those Cuban guys in the black ties and short sleeve white shirts to bang on the window and go down there and stomp around. I knew some guys, some investigators from New York around.
That was during the election, the 2000 election, right?
Yeah, when they were counting the hanging chads down there in Florida, between.
So you knew some investigators from New York that were involved in that?
Yes, they were sent down there to Florida to work for the Republicans. As bagmen, basically running around trying to swing that election. And there were stories about everyone, the meter maids, were going down there, ticketing Democrats down there. It was everyone, the dog catcher was taking their dogs. Everyone was, it was high pressure down there. But Stone was responsible for those Cubans showing up you see on TV.
Wow. I got to have you tell the story about Stone's people are aware of you. I think they contacted you at one point.
Yeah, everybody's aware of me. I know more and more everyone's aware of me. What happened was this was the day It was during the campaign, right? When the day, I think it was October 19th. It was the 19th, and it was at this. It was a day of the debate where Trump pulled out. He had Paula Jones there, and he had Juanita Broderick, and
all the ladies that accused Clinton of rape. Yeah,
right. And I've known Paula Jones. Paula Jones, by the way, her agent also was Gina Rodriguez for a while there. So I've known Paula Jones for years, even before all this. And I've interviewed all the other ones. I've interviewed everyone else in there. So they all know me. All those women in that room knew me. And that day, I get a phone call. This guy wants Kathy O'Brien's contact information. Kathy O'Brien, the Transformation America, the whole story about she was raped by Clinton, all this kind of stuff, right? MK Ultra, right?
She had a whole story about like Dick Cheney playing Most Dangerous Game on like some weird island. Yeah, really weird, crazy story. Don't know if I believe it all, but it's real out there and interesting to read.
Well, yeah, if you listen to my interview with her and her friend there, Mark Phillips, I thought their story fell apart. You know, if you listen at the end, I was fed up with them. It got very heated, you know. But we still maintain respect for each other. And when Mark Phillips supposedly died, she contacted me. Right, she used me as a source to break that story. Anyway, I get a phone call from a guy. He's asking me for he wants Kathy O'Brien's contact information. And I said, okay, I'll get it for you. He goes, yeah. I just got off the phone with Roger Stone. You're never gonna believe. And he goes, it was the same day as the Access Hollywood tape came out. And he goes, yeah, you're not going to believe it, that bleeping Kellyanne Conway is the one who leaked the Access Hollywood tape because she's CIA. Okay. That's what he says. So now, I don't know if that story's true or not, but yeah, I know he blurted this out. It wasn't like he was calling me up to make up this story. This was an afterthought. You know, it was a spontaneous utterance, they call it, you know? So he had just been talking to Stone, and this is what Stone was talking about. So that's what they were talking about on the day of this debate down there. That's what was going on behind the scenes, that they thought that Kellyanne Conway leaked that tape, and that because she was CIA, she did work for Ted Cruz, you know, who knows? Funny too is I said to him, I says, well, listen, man, show them my, all my YouTube stuff that I'm doing about Clinton. Show them all my shows about Clinton. If they want Kathy O'Brien, I'll hook them up with her, but show them all about the Clinton Foundation, all this stuff. Show them all my interviews. And, later on, I'm watching Trump. He's going down the line. All my topics, man. Now, you say, well, my God, Ed, you're crazy, right? But no, because you want to know why. I've known Rudy Giuliani since the pizza connection from the commission trial. I've known Rudy Giuliani for years. Back when I was just a kid working on those cases as a PI for the defense. But later on, I knew him again, too, when he was running for mayor and stuff. I hung out with Rudy Giuliani. He would know my name. He'd still know my name. He remembered me back then. So if Rudy Giuliani, who was flying on the plane with Trump every day, got that list, he would say, oh, Ed Opperman, yeah, he's a real guy. Let me look at these things. And then suddenly Trump's talking about all this stuff. So, you think, is this possible? Am I going crazy? You know, but then again, man, it's all there. And somehow I got involved with the Stormy Daniels stuff. Somehow I'm involved with the Sarah Palin stuff. It just seems this stuff falls in my lap, you know?
Yeah, there's that documentary, Get Me Roger Stone. They're going to make a documentary about you. Get Me Ed Opperman.
Yeah, I contacted that guy who did the documentary. He wouldn't come on the show.
Ah.
But you know what, though? Sometimes even when people won't come on the show and you talk to them, you chat back and forth, you still, you establish relationships, not with him so much, but you do kind of establish relationships with these people. So it's always helpful.
Yeah. And, I don't know. Do you have time to fill to just maybe like one or two of the listener questions I had?
Yeah, sure. Whatever you want, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of my listeners, they heard the last episode and your story about Capri Anderson and the Charlie Sheen case, and they wanted your take on, you know, the escort in the sex work world is you know, it's very dangerous for people who work in it. What is your take on how people that are in that line of work can sort of keep themselves safe I mean, is there a way, or?
You know what, man? Even living here in Vegas, you know, you meet a lot of these kind of girls, you know, which it seems like they sort of develop like a sixth sense, you know, and they're a little hardened around the edges, and they're very self-preservation, you know. So they you know, they're very careful in many ways. Some of them, you know, they're just high all the time and forget it. You know, you can see they're going to get eaten up, you know. But for the most part, if you're really, you know, a hard chick, you know, and you're working at this, you can get through it. What I find out more is that how much blackmail goes on with escort services and stuff. I had a big case up in the Northeast years ago, way before I ever had a radio show, where I had a client who was being blackmailed for $7,000 a month by this escort service ring. And I was able to locate all the people and identify all the people and put a stop to it, as a matter of fact. And then later on, too, you can get them arrested. We got the whole bunch arrested even after that. And there was another guy getting blackmailed that was a friend of his, and he never told me the amount. But when I would talk to them, they'd say, oh, forget, it's a lot more. You know, so there's a lot of money with these escorts blackmailing people. There's a lot of that goes on, and this is what goes on. You know, with these cases, you know, that you hear, you see on TV, there's a lot of blackmail. And even Trump said, you know, that would be one reason why we'd have a modeling agency. But even Trump said, and this connection with the Charlie Kushner, you know, going on blackmailing his brother-in-law. Trump said when they came at him with the Piscay tape, he says, well, all these hotels have cameras, you know, all of them. This guy owns hotels, and he's coming right out saying that all hotels have cameras. And they do, by the way. They have cameras in these hotel rooms. They claim, all the ones in Vegas do, they claim it's to keep an eye on the maids when you're not in the room. But they got cameras in these rooms. And there's all kinds of stories, too, about Trump having the switchboard from Mar-a-Lago went to his bedroom in his private quarters that he could listen in on people's vocals. So as far as escorts keeping safe, and my experience is they've got balls, man, you know, and they're blackmailing people and stuff like that way more than worrying about themselves being in danger. And they all seem to be their informants. Seems like these escort services too, or there's a lot of informants going on there too.
Yeah. It can be a very mercenary world. That's one of the reasons I find Stormy Daniels so fascinating, because you know, all these people on Twitter, they're always giving her shit, they're always, you know, calling her names, and she's just sort of like, yeah, I like having sex, fuck you. Like, she's like, I don't give it, I'll do whatever the hell I want, and I, you know what, I hope this Trump shit blows up even more. I'll make a movie out of it.
yeah, well, you know, she's plugged in with people who know this business, you know that kind of stuff, and know how to make money off it, and know how to get press from it. There's a lot of, you know, these stories you see for sale and the Inquirer and Radar Online, stuff like that too. Same folks, you know, selling those stories. At one point, Gina Rodriguez, everybody who was a guest on Dr. Drew Celebrity Rehab,
you were on one of Dr. Drew's shows at one point, I believe, right?
She got me booked on there. And the other, even too, the people on the show who I was allegedly surveilling, they were clients of Gina's too. You know, it was all, you know. Yeah, so, yeah. She was booking everybody, man, for Dr. Drew, and they had some kind of falling out. I wonder how they met.
Maybe she's got some dirt on him.
Dr. Drew? No, he's a doctor. He's a creepy guy, man. He's a creepy guy. He poses because you're trying to talk to this guy on TV, and he's not even looking at you. He's posing for the camera and doing this weird thing, this crook of his neck. It's very bizarre. I could tell you a bunch of stories, but that's a funny one.
Yeah, well, I mean, on the sex work stuff and the sort of blackmailing. Are you familiar with this reporter David Blixenspan? Have you ever heard of him?
Is he the sex tape guy?
Now, he does stuff. He mainly reports on pro wrestling, but he broke this one story about these two female pro wrestlers, like Mae Young and the Fabulous Moolah, and they were working in Vegas in like the '50s and stuff. And what they would do is they would have, I think, Mae Young pretend to be like an escort, and she would go with these men, and then she would beat them up, and they would tape it, and then they would blackmail the guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes on, man. You know, even Jerry Springer, he got blackmailed by that porn star, you know. Yeah. that stuff, and there's a lot of tapes out there too. You know, that's how it's going.
Yeah, yeah. So you think there's something to the P tape?
Oh yeah, because yeah, if you read the dossier, there's four independent witnesses. Two know each other and two know each other, but all four don't know each other. How do you come up with four people that know the same story? It's impossible. You know, they would come up with such a bizarre story about escorts and P and stuff like that. And then you have Keith Schiller saying that, well, yeah, you know, they asked me if you wanted hookers. I said, oh, no, we don't do that. But then I only stood out in front of his door for a little while. Then I went and I left. You know, there's too much. And then Trump trying to say right away. First of all, he didn't deny it for a long time. And then he says, oh, well, you know, we left before that time. He didn't leave. They got the flight logs. So there's too much lying about it. There's too much that's consistent with the behavior that we know about Trump. And Christopher Steele is a legit guy. This is a real guy, man. He's not making things up for fun. This is the craziest thing in the world. All this stuff about the dodgy dossier, the discredited, that's all nonsense. There's nothing in there that's been discredited. It's all been confirmed over and over. The only thing in there that was discredited was that Michael Cohen ran out and waved his passport around. But if you look now, McClarchy did all kinds of reporting on this. He's saying, no, they got proof that he was there. Manafort had five or six different passports. Why not Cohen? He could have that too. And the same folks running around with fake passports and visas. They're all got visas. They all got the visa scam going on. There's no doubt about that. You know?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where all the as I like to call them, the Trump traversies instead of right. The controversies go. But
before I forget, I'm sorry, I'm getting old. Before I forget, I'm a little disturbed because I asked around, and all the people involved with the Trump Epstein lawsuit, none of them are being asked about. Then Mueller hasn't contacted any of those people. No one. Why not? Why wouldn't Mueller be looking into all that stuff? There's blackmail there. There's extortion there. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Why isn't he going? Why? How come? And no one. I asked him. Mueller isn't looking into any of that stuff, which makes me concerned that there's a level of cover up that goes beyond all this. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I want to get to there was just one more listener that I had. Wanted me to ask about this Laurel Canyon stuff that we covered a little bit the last time. What's the story with like Laurel Canyon and this whole military industrial complex connection?
Well, yeah, you know, good old Dave McGowan, you know, had this theory that Dave McGowan was a great researcher, you know, and I liked him before anybody was talking about him, anybody heard of him. I think a lot of people heard him through me, you know. And then I got him. I mentioned him when I was interviewed on Coast to Coast. I mentioned, you know, no one heard of him then. You know, I mentioned him on the interview. I would mention him in a lot of interviews way back in those days. And then what happened was I needed money after I had interviewed him a few times. So I sold my Rolodex of all my guests to John B. Wells. And he went on John B. Wells with his theory about the Boston bombing, which I don't know if I endorse 100% on that one. So he has this theory that the whole 60s counterculture music scene in Laurel Canyon was really an operation of military intelligence and CIA and COINTELPRO type operation, because so many of these people have family members or were former military themselves, you know, and it's true. And a lot of weird stuff went on in Laurel Canyon with the Operation Lookout, you know what I'm talking about? Lookout Mountain.
Okay. What went on there?
Well, Lookout Mountain was a film studio that was run by the Pentagon and the military intelligence and stuff like that. And everybody went down there and filmed. People like Marilyn Monroe and Bob Hope would film down there. And what were they filming? You know, it was supposedly the biggest indoor film studio that they had, privately, you know, owned, that wasn't owned by like Universal. And what were these people filming? Where are these movies? What are they filming in there? You know, what is it? So they were doing some kind of military stuff, you know, propaganda type filming with the many. And then it's this weird guy, Jared Leto, wound up. He owns the place now. You know, there's a lot of weird stuff. One time there was a rehab place over there. So it has all that kind of shady stuff going on. So Dave McGowan had this theory that the whole 60s counterculture was an operation. And he even expanded further. It wasn't in his book or in the many interviews, but we've talked off the air, that even the punk rock scene, it's the same thing. You know, there's all this military, and the music industry was controlled by the mafia, and you know, all these guys were involved in stuff. Interesting too, you know, me and Dave, I don't know, that's a whole other thing too, where so much went on that people who talk about Dave McGowan, they're only scratching the surface. I actually, there was a thing that happened, went on, where some people involved with me and my show were stalking Dave on his deathbed at his hospital, trying to drive a wedge between me and Dave McGowan at the end. So there's a whole bunch of stuff with Dave, you know, that goes on that no one knows about. A lot of people know about it, but it's not known about in public on the air and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And the Laurel Canyon stuff is interesting because I think it's true that a lot of those, like, musicians that came out of the Laurel Canyon scene, they were like they were what would be called military brats, right?
Zappa, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, you know, yeah, they were all Doors. What is that guy? Jim Morrison was on the Jim Morrison's father was in, was a part of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Morrison was on that boat, you know, and even people, you know, Tex Watson from the Manson family too. He was a military guy, you know. Everyone stole my text once. He had a military buzz cut. He was climbing up the telephone poles and doing stuff like that, you know. But then the pictures, anyone went into hiding for like 6 months, and they couldn't extradite him back to California. And then when he comes back, suddenly has long hair, looks like a hippie. But at the time, he wasn't looking like a hippie. So it's all, you know, and me and Dave talked off the air too that perhaps the Weather Underground was infiltrated. We know that the SLA was. We know that for 100% fact. That was a government operation. So, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I know Dave would implicate Zappa in all this stuff, and I still love Frank Zappa and his music, but it's interesting because I think even Zappa wrote like a few songs where he would reference like the military industrial complex and Laurel Canyon in like the same song, you know, within lines apart from each other. So
yeah, Zappa seems to be a heavy part of this. He had, I think it was called the Log Cabin that his place was, where a lot of these people came out of. They were all influencing each other. They were all up to stuff. Yeah, you know, I've always said that I'm going to write a book, and it's going to be called The More I Learn, The Less I Know. You know, because when I was talking about this stuff with Dave McGowan and promoting this research, you know, 5 years ago, you know, now I know so much more, but I know less. You know, I have less convinced conclusions out of all the information I've got. And now, too, there's so much white noise out there. The infiltration of the alternative media, and you can't really trust anybody these days, and just so much white noise with all the QAnon and the Pedalgate. And all, you know, there's so much white noise out there that it's hard to bust through, you know. And I just did an interview with Neil Sanders, who did all this investigation into the Cambridge Analytica.
And the Manson case.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, yeah, I don't know. I'm not convinced about his work on the Manson case. I'm more with the Maury Terry faction on the Manson case, that Manson was connected with the Process Church. I'm convinced of all that. There's no doubt in my mind. But his work on Cambridge Analytica, he shows about how the Mercer family and the Koch brothers and stuff like that are funding. And all that money trickles down to the right-wing alt-media. You know, like Laura Loomer and these characters, you know, her reputation here in Vegas during the October 1 shooting was just notorious. You know, and they're all living high off the hog. That guy, Project Veritas, man, he's making a fortune. And wiretapping people's phones and stuff like that, getting away with it, you know.
So he's a sleaze merchant, that one.
Oh, yeah. We got to do a show one time about Acorn. We'll talk about Acorn. Because I know those guys here in Vegas. But all these guys, and then, you know, I start hearing these things about these YouTube, these right-wing YouTuber guys, you know, and how they have guests on their shows who try and raise money, and then the hosts and the guests split the money and stuff. They're cutting up money. You know, all these guys are making a ton of money. And then, And, you know, I start thinking, hey, you know, look, here I am. You know, I'm broke, man. I'm sticking my neck out here. I'm getting threatened all over the place. I'm getting stalked. I got someone stalking me right now. I got all kinds of stuff going on. You know, and, you know, maybe I'm an idiot. I'm coming here talking about all this stuff, thinking I'm making some kind of an impact or making some kind of, you know, progress here, when all these other guys are just in it for the money and a game and a scam and, you know, just the disinfo and government agents and stuff like that. And here I am like an asshole out here sticking my neck out. You know, and when a lot of guys been on my show, man, are dead. Cisco Streetlove, man, who did all that work on the child Atlanta child murders. I was really connected, hooked up there with Maury Terry. He's dead. Dave McGowan, he's dead. What the hell's going on? A lot of guys, you know, our little team that we had going on there, all sharing information back and forth. Like, stuff. Like half of these guys are gone. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid.
Well, I mean, I got to say, it's like, it's weird having seen these guys like Freeman Fly and the Red Ice people. They just, as soon as they started going into this white nationalist BS, their production values just skyrocketed.
That's
it's
what
all money. Slick. And I'm like, I've always wondered, who is funding these people? You know,
listen to the show with Neil Sanders. He does a really good job of showing who's funding it. But I didn't know Freeman Fly was doing that. That Red Ice guy, man, that guy's a Nazi white supremacist, man, my God. I didn't know that Freeman Fly was. Good thing I never interviewed him, because I kind of liked this stuff a couple years ago. But now, good thing, I hate those Nazis, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's odious. And, for my listeners that want to hear more about the Laurel Canyon stuff, I still think you have a lot of interviews up that relate to it. I know the John Holmes case even ties into McGowan's research.
Yeah, yeah, I interviewed his Schiller, his ex-girlfriend. She was like his teenage girlfriend. That's interesting, too, because we went looking for I wanted to do a show by Roy Cohen, and I started looking for a guest on Roy Cohen, and I saw that John Holmes, Johnny Wadd, the porn actor, used to hang out with Roy Cohen on his yacht and on his private plane and stuff like that. And then I said, oh, let me do a show about Johnny Wadd. And then I found out his girlfriend, she came on and shared a great bunch of information about Johnny Wadd. Yeah, and he was involved with that Four on the Floor murders there, the Wonderland murders there in Laurel Canyon.
I think McGowan wrote about it in the book, right?
He probably did. He probably did. I got a copy of that book that Dave sent me. I never actually read it, though. Four on the Floor Murders, that's a whole thing going on there too with Eddie Nash. And
yeah, big mob guy, Eddie Nash, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and they said they had hundreds of bodies in the desert. But and who's that guy who was Michael Jackson's boyfriend? He was Liberace's boyfriend. He was the witness, and he went to the witness protection program. Then when he left the witness protection program, they shot him up in a motel. He's in prison right now. He's connected up with that guy too, Dennis Hoff from the Bunny Ranch. Scott Thornton, who was a young man, they did a movie about him. He was a witness. He was there at Eddie Nash's house when Eddie Nash sent those guys over to kill everybody. And Holmes was there too, because, you know, his girlfriend Shirley says he showed up with blood later on that night. But Scott Thornton, I was going to get him on the show, and then he got busted again. Real mysterious. He was on Riding High because they did that movie about Liberace with Damon, you know, Matthew Damon, I guess it is, right? Matt Damon, yeah. Scott Thornton was, that was his story. And suddenly, Scott Thornton, he was living at the Bunny Ranch. Dennis Hoff was putting him up over there. Again, if you notice the pattern, you know what I mean? Escort service, you know? You might say blackmail. But Scott Thornton was living with him, you know, how they hook up, right? And Scott Thornton got mixed up with some guy. He stole some guy's wallet and stuff. And then Dennis Hopp got him a great lawyer. He was going to get out of it, but he didn't show up for court. And then he got like 30 years now. He's doing like 30 years, I think, at Lovelock here in Nevada, where OJ was.
Damn. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure there's like a million connections to the OJ stuff with, like, you know, all the research Steven Singular has done on that stuff. And, yeah. That goes back to Dershowitz.
Dershowitz, there's a lot of connections too with OJ and Manson and Scientology and Process Church.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, before I ever had a radio show years ago, and before even the internet, really, I did a flow chart of all the people involved with the Process Church and Scientology and the OJ case. And it was so thick and so elaborate that I was sitting on my porch one night at my friend's house, who was a cop in New York City. I was sitting on his porch and we were talking about it, and I just tore it up. I said, I don't want anything to do with this anymore. It's way too deep. But I got a lot of it still in my head.
And I guess the last listener question. I know people wanted me to get into the smuggling stories that involve like Richard Stratton and stuff, but I think we should save that for another time.
I'm actually thinking I'm going to do like a video because it involves so much with all that I don't really talk about, you know, because I was facing prison, you know, I was going to face 15 years in prison, and they were going to kill me in prison too. That's a whole other story. You know, I got saved. I got born again. I went into the ministry. I was traveling with a tent ministry and stuff like that during that whole period of time. I had a huge miracle because I should have went to prison. It's a interesting part of my life. At the time, you know, I'm facing 15 years in prison, man. It's no joke. Plus, they're going to kill me. That was the fight of my life. I always used to say for years, it's the fight of my life, man. Let me tell you this story, you know, and I'd tell them in detail, you know, what happened when they busted me and all, you know. Plus all these guys, Richard Stratton, you know, I was getting my part from the hippie mafia, all these guys in the Yippies and High Times magazine and stuff like that, and had my own guys down in Mexico after a while. And, you know, the fight of my life. But I got to tell you, man, when I had the situation with my daughter and the custody fight with my daughter against my ex-wife, that was the fight of my life. And that took way more out of me than any kind of organized crime or smuggling cases or Sarah Palin or Trump or anything, man. That was the fight of my life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, you know, there's a million and one things we can get into. The last listener question I had, though, if you're up for it, was I guess someone was telling me that you're involved with a documentary that John Potosh is making, Drugs as a Weapon Against Us. Is that true? Or?
Oh, no, the documentary's out. The documentary's out. And it's an award-winning documentary. It's really good. What happened was, I just found out about this, but I was interviewing Hank Harrison and John Potosh. I was interviewing Hank Harrison off the air about Soaked in Bleach, right? And it was going to be for the member section.
Hank Harrison is that's Courtney Love's dad, right? He used to be like a Grateful Dead like groupie.
No, he was involved with the Warlocks. He was their manager, and he was definitely hooked up with the Grateful Dead intimately. And a lot of other stuff with a lot of the people from he knew anyway, a ton of stuff. He told me that Kenneth Anger told him that they were doing satanic rituals on the set of MTV. The people involved with MTV were doing satanic rituals.
Well, Kenneth Anger, the experimental occult filmmaker. Yeah,
Satanist. Yeah. Well, anyway, Lucifer Rising, Kenneth Anger. But anyway, I got hours. I went down and visited Hank Harrison at his home in California when we were on the Bernie Sanders, when I was covering the Bernie Sanders campaign. We have hours of video footage at his home. We just haven't gotten around to doing anything with it. I also have, he sent me hours and hours of telephone recordings of him and Courtney Love when she was a juvenile in juvenile detention. And with that guy, El Duce, about the murder of –
The Mentors, the guy from The Mentors got hit by like a train. Yeah. He was saying that Kurt Cobain was murdered.
Yeah. So I was interviewing Hank Harrison about Soaked in Bleach, and I just happened to be chatting at the same time during this interview with John Potosh, who is an excellent, excellent author and researcher and guest on the show. Excellent guy. I put him right up there with Dave McGowan. He did all this work to the murder of Tupac Shakur and about drugs as weapons against us and about how the FBI and COINTELPRO and the CIA murders rock stars and actors and leftists and activists.
Going after Biggie, Tupac, everyone, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I'm interviewing Hank Harrison, and then Potter says, hey, man, I want to ask him some questions. So he says, ask him this, ask him that. I said, well, come on and ask him. So he comes on this taped show to ask live questions of Hank Harrison. It's about how Courtney Love, when she went to Ireland, she had with her like 10,000 hits of LSD. She was 15 years old, which is the same pattern of the CIA, you know, COINTELPRO using LSD to sabotage the leftist activists. And the guy who was her boyfriend at the time was a 35-year-old CIA agent. And I got Hank Harrison to talk about all this live on our show. And so John Potosh took that and he put that in his excellent documentary, Drugs as Weapons Against Us. And so I found out about this. I didn't even know about it. I didn't even know he used it. And it's in the trailer, too. If you look up the trailer, the part, a portion of my interview is in there, too. So we just went to the film festival in Beverly Hills, and we sat there and watched this thing. It's an excellent documentary. It goes into the whole opium trade and Timothy Leary and the Black Panthers and everything, man. And the funny part, though, is because I like to – on my IMDb page, you know, I love to update it with new things. So as soon as I found out I was going to be in this movie, I said, ooh, let me go update my IMDb page. And so I did. And then a few days later, they took down all of our names. They took down Timothy Leary and all the people that were in this thing. They took down all our names. So I went back and I re-updated it again. And so now when you look up Drugs as Weapons Against Us on IMDb, the only two people on there are me and Bobby Seale. So it seems like I'm half the movie. I'm only on there for like 2 minutes or 3 minutes tops, 4 minutes toward the end. But it's an excellent document. It's winning awards.
Bobby Seale from the Black Panthers. Yeah.
Panther Party of Self Defense. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like it's going to be great. And real quick, Hank Harrison, Soaked in Bleach is the Kurt Cobain murder documentary. What's his take on Cobain?
He wrote a book himself. Hank Harrison just came out with a book called Love Kills, The Assassination of Kurt Cobain. And he's 100% convinced that Courtney killed Kurt.
And his daughter.
His daughter, yeah. Well, they're estranged now. He's never met his granddaughter. He's estranged with Courtney Love now. Has been for years. But, you know, all the stuff going on with them when she was 15, you know, and he was out there doing stuff. We've talked about her. She was involved with an escort service and a madam and stuff like that. She was on Jeffrey Epstein's plane, Courtney Love. She was at Versace's house the day before he died. Okay? Courtney Love's involved in a lot of stuff. She was mixed up with that guy, Sam Lufty, who was Britney Spears' manager. When she was having that major breakdown, shaving her head and running around doing crazy stuff. Courtney Love is involved in a lot of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's a dangerous character.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, are those Hank Harrison interviews still up on do you have any with him on the Opperman Report on the Spreaker or the member section?
Yeah, there's a ton of them on Spreaker, and there's a couple in the member section. Just Google Ed Opperman, Hank Harrison. There's a ton of stuff out there. But like I said, I got all that video we want to put together and put out. And I got all those tapes of him and his daughter that we have to put in. Hank Harrison was dating Sandra Good, one of the Manson girls. He was dating her sister. Yeah, he was dating his sister.
You know, it's interesting. I found out recently that Sandra Good has some connections to some prominent alt-right people. You know, her name has popped up. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Yeah, those alt-right guys, that's where the money is, man. You know, I don't blame people for if you're just in this for a business, you know, in this to make money, that's the way to go.
And for my listeners, Sandra Good's she's like a Manson girl, Charles Manson.
Yeah. It was one of the murders, yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I always tell people that I like to end my shows on a positive note. So I heard recently through the grapevine that you know, you have a sort of instinct that Bernie Sanders may be running again in 2020. What's your take on the possibility for that?
Oh, it's 100%. Yeah. We know from the people here in Nevada. He got screwed here in Nevada, you know. And I intimately know everybody who was involved in that. I know people that were on the platform committee. I had a copy of the Democratic platform before it went public. I have a copy of it. I'm pretty plugged into all that, you know, and Bernie's running. I don't know, man. Listen, he kind of sold us out. He sold us out here in Nevada too more recently. But, you know, he sold us out. He did endorse Hillary, you know. I have firsthand eyewitnesses that said they saw him getting roughed up by Jesse Jackson and Danny Glover, who were there at Philadelphia. A lot went on at the Philadelphia convention that's never been reported. It's been reported on my show. But it hasn't been reported on any of the left-leaning shows and hasn't even been reported on Fox News. A lot went on down there. So it goes to show you how much the Clintons control the media still to this day, you know. And from what I know that happened, especially in the primary and all that kind of stuff with Bernie and Hillary, never reported, totally covered up. Just imagine how much power they have still to cover things up and control the media, the mainstream media, the stuff that doesn't come out.
Well, yeah. That maybe we won't be able to end on a positive note. I mean,
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I know you're doing a lot of good work in Nevada. I think you were just at one of the ICE protests. You have anything good to report on there? I'm going to get the positive thing here.
Yeah. We did have a great event last night at the Henderson Detention Center. People protesting ICE detention and also the prison conditions. There's a hunger strike going on nationwide right now. Doesn't get much press, but we had a nice turnout there yesterday. People, you know, I think with the whole thing with the cages and stuff like that, I think we got some good groundswell support on that. You know, we have to stand up. You know, we have more people in prison in the United States than any other country in the world, more than China, more than Russia, and anywhere else, the higher population. And the odds of winding up at that defense table for the average person is so much greater than ever having justice if your house has been robbed, your car's been robbed. So people need to wake up about this and resist the police state and the prison state that we have in this country. And I think it's one of the main things we need to resist, because that's they really got that hanging over us, you know. And police brutality and the police shootings of unarmed people here, you know. So, but I am encouraged to see, you know, Black Lives Matter out there and the people we saw yesterday, the protesting the ICE and also protesting prison conditions here in Nevada.
Well, we also I know you've been pretty positive about the these younger kids that are sort of getting in there with the DSA and democratic socialism. So, you know, I think there's a lot of hope there yet.
Absolutely, that is definitely true. I always said I supported Bernie. I didn't, you know, I thought Bernie would get 20%, you know. And I always said, listen, this is gonna the people who, because especially when I went to that first Bernie rally, it was right before the debate when he was debating Clinton here in Las Vegas, and I saw the people that showed up. These were bright people. These were people that tuned in. They knew what was going on. And I says, you know what? We support Bernie. We organize these people. We make lists. We set up groups. We get to know these people. And there's so many young ones that were in high school that now are voting age. So I am definitely encouraged with that. People are not afraid of the word socialist anymore. They're not afraid of socialism. They're this watered down new description of socialism. You know, that somehow involves free healthcare and college and stuff like that, which is great. Let's do that. But we need to nationalize like the oil industry, man. There's a $50 billion in profit every quarter in the U.S. oil industry, and that's a national resource. It's a natural resource. It's under your feet. It's under my feet. You and I own that equally, just as equally as these guys that got to it first with these, you know, these their slaves and their railroads and stuff like that. Man, we own that just as much as they do. And if we would just got 25% of that $50 billion, man, divided up against 350 million people, the price of oil could go down so drastically. I mean, drop by 25%. Price of oil, that would reduce the price of gasoline, that would reduce the cost of goods and services. Just think, your landscaper would be cheaper, your tomatoes would be cheaper, your beer, we would knock 25% off the price of beer. Wouldn't that make you happy, Joe? We just ended on a great note. Nationalize the oil industry, 25% decrease in the price of beer.
Well, I think that is the good note to end
that's
on.
The
and I want to give you a chance to you know, well, first I want to thank you for coming again on Parallax Views and answering some listener questions, as well as covering the Trump controversies. Would you like to plug the Opperman Report in your members section?
Yeah, I'd like to thank you, too. I do enjoy these interviews with you. You're a fun guy. And, you know, you're tuned in, you know. You're not paid off like some of these guys out there you got to worry about. My member section is at OppermanReport.com, and there's a lot of great content, and that's how you support the show and support my efforts here. If you like hearing the stuff of the work I'm doing here, I do stick my neck out, and that's how I support what I do. You know where my money comes from. I don't have any mysterious donors or sponsors. The Mercers don't like me. The Cokes don't like me. Soros doesn't send me any money. Nobody sends me money. So, OppermanReport.com. You can join our member section and help support the work I'm doing. I got a book out there called How to Become a Successful Private Investigator. And it's not just for guys who want to be PIs. If you're a researcher out there, this will teach you some stuff. You'll learn some stuff in this book for sure. If you want to be in the PI business, it's great for you. Also, too, the first chapter is like the story of my life. It's like a little expanded bio on my life, too, so people like to hear about me. That's in there as well. But it's a lot of good life lessons in there on in just how to get around asset searches and background checks and locates and people, stuff like that. It's a lot of good stuff in there, and how to become a successful private investigator by Edopper, and that's the book. My website's emailrevealer.com. If you need any kind of PI work done, you can find me there. The adoption investigation, asset searches, locates. You think your email address is being hacked and someone's reading your emails, we can check on that. If you think your spouse is cheating on you, we can trace your email address back to online dating websites, catch them cheating online, all kinds of fun stuff. Emailrevealer.com. I'm so used to reading my commercials, Ed.
Well, thanks again for coming on Parallax Views, Ed Opperman.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you again.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with returning guest Ed Opperman, private investigator and host of the Opperman Report. You know, I just want to say one of the reasons I love having Ed on is that he represents a unique voice that we seldom hear in either the mainstream or alternative media. And namely, that's the voice of someone coming from what I would more or less call the Christian left. Now, I come from a much more secular perspective, but I think we need people like Ed to show that, you know, the Jerry Falwells of the world do not have a monopoly on the Christian religion. You know, we always think of the religious right, but there is a growing Christian left in America today. It's a burgeoning movement, folks, and Ed's one of the voices of it. And I hope more people will listen. And with that being said, I hope my listeners will check out Ed's podcast, The Opperman Report, over at Spreaker. And also consider joining Ed's members section at the Opperman Report website, which I've linked to in the episode description. You get a lot of exclusive content and interviews with expert guests that you won't hear anywhere else. Again, I think we need voices out there like Ed's, even when we don't agree on everything, you know? We need to foster a big tent that's inclusive to all of us who believe in the better angels of our nature in these interesting times. And with that, I think I'm going to close out the show with an upbeat little track entitled We're Gonna Make It by Lightflow. Check them out, folks.